Hey, Chris Manning here from Locked On Cavs. Coming up on today's show, it is the second to last edition of the Vintage Cavs Book Club. We're getting close to the end here, but we're going to dive into three more chapters and then two and kind of a wrap-up next week. We're going to announce at the end of this show, I'm going to tell you now what the next book in the book club is going to be, but that's all coming up very much here soon on the Locked On Cavs podcast, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Also want to let you know that today's sponsor is the title sponsor of the network for this episode is Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. Check them out at BuiltBar.com.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My, my, my. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Ari, Ari. He's gone. Xbox at him today at the Q.
On the blow block. He put him in cement boots. Colin Sexton for two.
Come on.
Evan, what's up, buddy? How are you?
Oh, not too bad. It's really nice to hear Built Bar again. Hear from Built Bar again. It's been a while, but it hasn't been a bit too bad of a week of recording this earlier in the week. Don't want to give too much of how the sausage is made here, but this is Friday's episode. The draft lottery will be less than a week away at this point, and I'm looking forward to finally having something to talk about when it comes to the Cavs at this point. How are you?
I'm good. We are kind of in the throes of it. We're kind of running through a bunch of different things going on with the Cavs and kind of figuring stuff out. Obviously, we had, you know, the Ben Simmons podcast this week and a whole bunch of other stuff kind of percolating out there. But it's somehow a fun time for us to talk about the Cavs. And it's fun for us to write up and through, just so people know if you're listening for the first time. Evan and I kind of co-run Fear the Sword together. We co-host this podcast. Evan's at Forbes, I'm at Forbes, and we're kind of everywhere on the internet a little bit.
You know, we're everywhere at this point. We're on TV, we're on
BookMe, CNN, Philippines or something.
Well, no, book us WKYC. Let's talk with our buddy,
yeah, Ben
Axelrod. Yeah, Ben, if you're listening, bring us on. We'll talk Cavs with you anytime, anywhere. I'll wear a suit and Zoom call in whenever you want me to. I'll green screen something cool too, but let's talk about some light reading. And before we get started, I am hugely, massively, bigly, as the orange in the office would say, disappointed in our listeners for still not sending me a book report. So I'm expecting at least a humdinger from one person, but no, we're getting towards the end here and I'm kind of sad that we are.
Yeah, this book has grown on me as we've read it. There's certainly parts of it that I don't totally love. But I think there are parts of it that I think are really, really astounding work from Terry Pluto. I don't know if this chapter about the game in 88 is one of my favorites, though. I don't know how you feel about it.
It's not my favorite, but I think what I liked about this book so much is the fact that Terry is a fountain of wealth because he's been covering Cleveland sports for God knows how long at this point.
I mean, he's the OG of Cleveland sports media by like a wide margin.
For sure. I mean, at least in terms of living sports media, if you want me to get dark with it real quick. But he's a fountain and wealth of knowledge, and the fact that he's able to write a at-length 200-plus page book about his experience with one of his favorite eras of Cavaliers basketball is super endearing. But I enjoyed it as someone who wasn't alive in 1988 to read about this stuff. And actually, I think this is, if I'm getting this right, I believe this is the game of the ill-fated live stream that this chapter is based on.
Is it? It might be.
I think. Let me just flip to see how many points Michael scored, and then we'll know.
I don't think so.
I'm flipping. Keep stalling for me, Chris. Come on.
But I think for me, Evan, one of the things, I guess I'll just say that about this is, Del Curry comes up later in this chapter. He's a little bit of a what if for me, because the Cavs went so heavy on bigs with Danny Ferry and whatnot, and that's like a real issue, you know, just kind of with some of the issues you have with the Cavs. I think, things kind of fall apart, like that's a real concern. But it's so interesting that Wayne Embry was clearly in on Del Curry, but Del Curry's a guy that's like a little bit ahead of his time to some degree.
Yeah, him and Mark Price both, and first off, I was wrong. It was 2 years later Michael Jordan scored.
Yeah, I didn't think this was
a very nice 69 points. So, yes. But no, to your point, Wayne Embry was ahead of his time for sure in the fact that Del Curry was kind of the archetype of what Seth and Steph both are as three-point specialists and just no playmakers. And in his 1 year in Cleveland, he played 79 games, started 8 of them, and averaged 10 points. 45.8% shooting, he shot about 35% from three, and then has chipped in as well, 2.1 rebounds, 1.9 assists, and 1.2 steals, which is pretty solid for a backup guard. But no, this Cavs team was a little ahead of its time. Like, it's a lot like the Don Nelson Mavericks too, which were trigger happy three point shooting team as well. This Cavs squad would be a lot of fun in today's NBA, and I think would be a consistent threat for the NBA title if you're able to take this 80s and 90s, early 90s Cavs squad and plop them in today's NBA. Especially, I mean, again, Mark Price would be such a well-regarded player in today's NBA if he was playing. And, like, if he didn't run into the buzzsaw that was Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls, I think we'd be having a very different conversation about Mark Price right now.
I think that's reasonable. I think one of the things in this chapter that I underlined was Terry Pluto's thing. This was before teams were three-point happy. They believed a 15-footer was a good shot. Look, no one actually thinks 15-footers are just, like, bad shots. That's just, like, one of the dumbest. Points. What?
Points are points. Like,
well, no, yeah, but the thing, people, you don't want them, like, leaning on them, like, unnecessarily. Yeah. Like, they're really efficient for a certain number of guys.
Agreed.
Like, I hate that argument the way we talk about basketball now, versus, and I think that's one of the dumbest ways to talk about how the game has changed, frankly.
No, I agree with that assessment. I think the Rockets are kind of a extreme example of modern NBA hoops where they shoot as many three-pointers as they can, but I don't think it's a bad thing. But, like, I guess I can see where Terry's coming from. Like, you take 15-footers, you take mid-range shots. Like, that's not a terrible thing. But, like you said, you should be relying on them. You should be relying on dunks, layups, and three-point shots, and free throws as well. Like, those four things. If your team is efficient at all four of those, you probably have a very, very good, if possibly the greatest offense of all time. But a mid-range shot every now and then isn't going to kill you, especially if you have a big who is capable of hitting a shot like that. Like, it provides a little bit of spacing, which is a nice thing to have.
Do you think about, Evan, is there like a, do you think we're going to end up being kind of this nostalgic for any era of Cavs basketball we've lived through?
I mean, I'm already nostalgic after these last two seasons for the heyday of LeBron, Kyrie, and Kevin. Like, I get chills sometimes watching those guys play together and hearing LeBron say, Cleveland, this is for you, still, you know, tugs on the old heartstrings a little bit. But I think, yeah, I think I'll be a bit of a boomer when it comes to this stuff, and I won't be the obnoxious Cleveland fan who consistently reminds you that the Warriors blew a 3-1 lead in the NBA Finals and holds on to the fact that the Cavs were the first modern Cleveland team, at least in the last 5 decades, to win a championship. Especially, like, oh, and I won't be heartbroken if the Browns, like, ever won a Super Bowl, or if, like, the Indians ever won the World Series. Like, I'd just be happy for the city at this point, but, like, I'm happy the Cavs did it first, and I don't think I'll be a historian like Terry was, because the Cavs will never allow the media to have that kind of access like Terry did to the team.
No, but, and that is one of the big, probably my biggest takeaway of the book, that you're losing something, readers and listeners, when you don't get the access Terry got back then.
Yeah, no, Terry was able,
like,
to
people on Twitter
hoops.
Always like, can we get writing that isn't with blogs and video clips and numbers? I'm like, yes, I would fucking love to write that way, but when I'm, like, not getting the access, I need to actually do that kind of stuff.
Hear, hear.
It's not, you can't do that without the access. Like, I can't, I'm not just gonna make shit up.
No,
I'm just getting annoyed when I see those tweets, because those, like, it's a very dumb thing that very smart people say, and because they don't understand how this really works. And, like, one of the few people that could get access, like Lee Jenkins, like, now works, for, like, the Clippers, and, like, the number of people that actually have that kind of access and can get it is very, very limited because of how the NBA works out, and that sucks.
Well, that may have, like, the personality of somebody who's very good with analytics and numbers, and it's off-putting to NBA players and some front office members. But yeah, no, Lee Jenkins is one of the last good ones. in terms of Cleveland sports, I feel like Scott Rabb is the other one. Like, Scott somehow gets a ton of access to every player. He's able to pull strings just because of his access and his legacy. But I don't think we're going to get a lot of narrative-based stuff going forward unless a journalist is willing to sell their soul in order to obtain said access, which Chris and I are neither of those people, so...
I don't have it in me.
No, I just...
I just don't. Can we wrap up here before I say something that's going to get me in trouble?
Yeah, you're going to do something you're about to regret as I rub my hands together. No, Chris, I know you're frustrated. Maybe you need to hit the gym for a little bit here.
I mean, can't. I mean, not pandemic, but maybe my basement gym.
Your home gym, go for a run, but you need a little burst of protein. You maybe need a meal supplement, and we haven't heard from them in such a long time at this point, but let me tell you about Built Bar. And actually, Chris, why don't you tell me about Built Bar instead because of technical difficulties?
Guys, Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever, and they are back. The new improved Built Bar is even deliciouser. They have 18 amazing flavors, including 6 new flavors that are caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. And there's also all the additional original flavors, including peanut butter brownie, raspberry, German chocolate, banana bread, and a whole bunch more. If you are listening for the first time, just hang with Built Bars. These are healthy bars that are great for the health conscious guy. They have great low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber macros for your diet. And example, peanut butter has 19 grams of protein, 180 calories with just 5 grams of sugar and 5 net carbs. And the new cookies and cream has 17 grams of protein, 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar and 4 grams of net carbs. Right now, you get a free cooler with purchase while supplies last. You should get that on this as fast as possible. And if you go to BuiltBar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off your next order. Again, promo code LOCKEDON at BuiltBar.com. Well, there you guys have it, Built Bar. And I'll be right back to talk about the next chapter. About a little-known power figure in the NBA, a very clutch power figure that's not Rich Paul, right after this. All right, Evan, let's talk about this chapter. I want to say, when I was reading this chapter, one of the things that isn't the core theme of the chapter is I just like forget how many Catholic. Sometimes I forget how many Catholic high schools there are in Northeast Ohio.
It's an obnoxious amount.
And I'm a little biased, Chris, because my cousin went there.
Which
went to Benedictine.
Well,
I did not go to Catholic school. I went to good old public school.
I went to Wadsworth, baby, the big dub.
Brunswick.
What's up? Which Catholic high school was your least favorite in your high school experience before we get started? There's one right answer here, so choose wisely.
Ignatius.
No, mine's Ed's. Fuck.
It's both Ignatius and Ed's, frankly.
Ed's. I wrestled in high school and facing St. Ed's because I did not have the coordination to play basketball.
Oh my god!
And I hit puberty before everybody else, so it kind of like just worked out for a little bit there. But I was on the varsity team when we faced Ed's when we won the state title my junior year, and it was a bloodbath. And there's a special place in my heart that makes me hate St. Edward's 3 times as hard as any other high school.
Okay, I did not know this about your high school wrestler, and this is like kind of surprising, frankly.
Really? You wouldn't be surprised by like my stocky build, my broad shoulders, and the fact that
it's more your interests and your personality. It's not sure I can just like wrestler, bro.
I didn't fit in with the culture of the locker room at all. I tutored a lot of the kids because they're all dumber than a box of rocks. But
I RA'd for some in college, and they were not the most fun people to be around.
OU wrestling is really good. A lot of Wadsworth kids actually went to OU, so I'll give you that one. Because Akron discontinued. Well, actually, I tried off the club team, made it, and they discontinued the club team my freshman year. But anyways, let's talk about other Catholic high schools. You said
so, but my point
here
is, I think with here's the Benedictine alumni list includes Mark Termini, who's the lead of this chapter, Jerome Baker, the Russo brothers. You have just a lot of Benedictine, like low key, like pretty impressive alumni list. And Mark Termini, as kind of a guy who has, as far as this book indicates, and I don't know any different, is he's still based in Brecksville, a Cleveland guy through and through, which rules.
Excuse me. Rich what? Paul is also Benedictine.
Oh yeah,
alumni.
Rich Paul. Rich Paul went to Benedictine. So Benedictine just like really out here crushing it. Jonah Wong, like my favorite cousin. Joe, he definitely is not listening to this podcast, but Joe, I love you. Hope you're doing well in Utah. But him being like a guy that structures a lot of the contracts and was like so at the forefront of like what this sort of looked like is really, really interesting. And look at all Terry having a good relationship with him also speaks to how different it is now.
Well, Terry's also just like an incredibly lucky individual. Like, that's what I really got from this book too. Like, wow, he lucked into so many connections with this team.
Yes. But I think that's a benefit of the access of the time.
Yeah, that too. That's, again, something we'll never see, at least, not even just in the Cavs, I guess, just in general. Like,
it's an NBA change. It's the WNBA, as people may, I don't know if this is on the actual episode, but I talked about that with Katie Davidson on the Wubble episode. And that was a really big thing, was just the access level that she leans into, I think, is one of the things that makes the WNBA really special. Mm-hmm. Because if you're even an upstart reporter, you could probably get like a 15-minute phoner with like Candace Parker or something like that. Like, if I wanted to get ex NBA star for 15 minutes, it's like I can't even get Jordan Bell, you know?
No,
it's one of those things. But I know when I think about Mark Termini and I think about his, he's got the Flip Saunders connections, he's got all of these different kind of lead ups and kind of impacts that are kind of under the radar, like. It's really notable that he is like such a part of the power structure and how he kind of comes from the old NBA, even though he's, you know, working now with an agency that is arguably the lead agency in all of basketball.
No, he really is. And
if you're hearing, I believe my lawn is being cut right now. If people can hear that behind you, I apologize.
Oh, the big, fancy, rich and famous Chris Manning.
My brother-in-law, Kevin Miller, runs his own landscaping business. We do babysitting exchange for lawn cutting. If you need lawn cutting, KBM Landscaping, Northeast Ohio, check them out. Free ads.
You know, Mark Termini really is a big power player, and more so, it's that alumni connection with Rich Paul, because Mark Termini was critical in the foundation of Clutch Sports, which is now the most powerful NBA agency and is starting to dip its toes in the NFL. It's going to probably dip its toes into baseball pretty soon, and then eventually hockey, once they can find a player they can stick with. Like, Rich Paul became a power player because he first learned at CAA, and then he learned from Mark Termini, and that's a huge thing as well. But, like, another fascinating thing in this chapter is, like, just the foundation, and just, like, it's just cool, I guess, that, like, one of the most powerful sports agents came from, like, a lot of, one, notable alumnus came from this high school, like, Chuck Knoll's on this list as well, but, like, one of the most powerful agents came from this high school, and then also Case Western. Case Western is a powerhouse in terms of executives for most sports teams and agencies, so it's just fascinating to see, like, how this just all went.
I think it's kind of interesting that, like, I think there's actually a lot about how the NBA sort of, how contracts work that we don't know that I wish we knew more about.
Yeah, and I do wonder, like, I know we're jumping ahead a little bit to the next chapter, but, like, Ron Harper was a notable client who was a player of Mark Termini's and who played for the Cavaliers at the time. Like, the big what if is, like, do you think the Cavs really, what if they didn't trade Ron Harper? Like, what would have happened? Yeah.
I don't think they win a title, but it seems like it kind of it compounds a couple of other mistakes that probably happen after that. And it's interesting to think, like, the communication process seemed like very broken down, and Termini would be a guy that would be really interesting to look back at this time. Like, I think if you were going to write a book about, like, a definitive history of that era of Cavs, really I feel like you would need to have him in there.
Kind of like the beginning of the end, too, when they traded.
It's like context and kind of pushback against, like, narratives you're going to get from the guys that were writing things.
At the time, it seemed like a good trade, but then Ron Harper was able to salvage his body and his career and become a stalwart for the Bulls. But, like, trading for Danny Ferry kind of feels like the beginning of the end for this Cavs squad, too, doesn't it? Yeah, it's a shame, and then Danny played a big part in the future.
I could not read the Danny Ferry bits of this book without thinking that, frankly. And that's pretty concerning. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of going to be one of those tricky things to really look back and know. And the Jordan Bulls are obviously so historically great. It's just like Termini's a guy that, like, just because he obviously has some connection in there, I would just like to know a little bit more, just because it would be interesting to know, like, what he thinks about some of the breakdowns. And, like, look, like, he would know better than anyone, considering he worked in it then and worked in it now, how these things work differently now. Because we'll talk about this in the Ron Harper stuff. It just doesn't feel like the vetting process was, like, all that thick on a lot of this. And now it's, like, it's much more detailed for a variety of reasons, and that's kind of important. And also be sure to check out Axios. Start your morning with the news that matters in just 10 minutes. Axios Today host Nyla Boodoo and a team of award-winning journalists will bring you the latest analysis and insight into the trends shaping our world. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts. And also be sure to check out the Axios Sports newsletter from Kendall Baker. You may see Locked On advertising there, but they're great. Check out Axios Sports. Subscribe to that. We'll be right back with more Locked On Cavs. All right, we're back here. Evan, I'm going to cede the floor to you here first. Give me a Ron Harper trade take.
Probably a huge mistake, because Danny Ferry didn't work out for the Cavs, because he signed, in 1990, they signed him for 10 years, $34 million, which was a massive contract at the time. And then he was the Cavs' all-time leader in games played for a while till Z surpassed him and had career in Cleveland. He was never the star player he was at Duke, just because of the litany of injuries he suffered, and especially how he played in Italy. But if I had to think of Danny Ferry, because his family made such a big stink about him going to the Clippers, he feels like the Eli Manning of basketball before other players said they didn't want to come to certain teams. And, like, nowadays you have players like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander who flat out tells the Cavs, I'm not going to play for you, and the Cavs don't draft you. So I feel like times are different back then too, because executives were more worried about losing their jobs, because they don't take there isn't the pressure of social media where, like, a player like Danny Ferry could go on to say, like, I don't want to play for the Clippers, or, like, make a huge stink about it, and then he gets, like, public momentum on his side and all that other stuff, blah, 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 blah. But it's also similar to John Elway as well, like, wanting to not play for the Colts, and he gets traded to the Broncos and everything else. Like, that's just what it feels like to me. And, like, reading about how Mark Termini took care of Danny Ferry while he was in Italy, like, he was made in the freaking shade. And, like, the way his lifestyle was set up when he was playing in Italy, like, I would never want to come to the NBA, because he was playing in such, like, a picturesque town and everything else. Like, just the Clippers draft him, great, I'll just never show up. Like, I'd stay in Italy. What about you?
No question, I'm staying in Italy. I would get fat for sure and all that stuff, but
Oh, same.
Man, oh man, oh man, like, the setup he had in terms of paid rent, high salary, maids that are cooking for him and stuff, seems pretty incredible.
He lived in a villa in, like, a very beautiful town, which is now Virtus Roma, but he played outside of, he played in Rome. Like, that's, like, a beautiful, picturesque town in Italy, like, iconic, and I would never want to leave, especially if I had to go to Cleveland, Ohio. I mean, not to dog on Cleveland, I love it to pieces, but if I had to pick between living in Italy and living in Cleveland, I'd pick living in Italy and celebrating the triumphs of Cleveland from there every time.
Evan, give me one second. I'm going to let him roll by.
Yeah, you're good, man.
Is it really loud on your end?
You can hear it in the background, but if you cleaned it up, it wouldn't be that bad.
All right, I'll have to fuck around with it. Okay. So I guess the other part of this too is just, like, the NBA obviously was very different at this time, and I don't think Ron Harper, there's enough out there to suggest that, like, Ron Harper being Ron Harper, the best version of himself. Well, let's just not even beat around the bush. They're basically, like, he gets traded in part because they thought he was, like, involved with people that were being investigated for selling, like, cocaine.
Yeah, and I mean, Mark Termini did the most.
Like, they didn't, like, really investigate it correctly. They were just, like, the whispers are out there, and, like,
they just assumed it was correct, and then they're like, all right, he's done, which is terrible, just a terrible way to go about it. But I feel like the Cavs, like I said, like, he was also just kind of beat up at the time, and it feels like it was at the point of no return because of this, and, like, the fact that he was injured, it was just not going to work out for the Cavs. And it's unfortunate for the Cavs that he was able to, I mean, fortunate for him, but unfortunate for the Cavs that he was able to regain form and become such a key piece to playing alongside Michael Jordan in the triangle with the Chicago Bulls, and then I believe he was at the Lakers as well and won a few titles with them. Like, Ron Harper was a key piece to Phil Jackson, and that probably would have never happened if the Cavs didn't trade him. But at the same time, like, it was an issue of the Cavs listening to whispers that weren't true, and then also Ron Harper just seemed like he was shot at that point. It seemed like it was best for the Cavs to move on, and it was I took the risk, but boy, I was bad at the math kind of situation.
I think one part of this, too, that is, like, really troubling is, like, when you think about them paying Danny Ferry, and, like, okay, if you believe he's going to work for you and the NBA's played differently at that time, like, obviously we know now, like, you would pick the wing over the four every time.
Yeah.
Like, that's just no question. But you compound it by also paying, like, their salary just skyrockets because they're basically four of their big contracts are Larry Nance Sr., Brad Doherty, Danny Ferry, and Hot Rod Williams. And yeah, basically Danny Ferry's impact isn't all that much. There's all these, like,
he was
Hot Rod
off the bench for the Cavs the entire time. Yeah,
and so, like, all your money is invested in this one spot, and it leaves you kind of in this weird position, and you're not even really maximizing yourself in a way that kind of is important. Mm-hmm. The quotes in this chapter don't lead you to think that, like, Price and those guys didn't exactly vibe with the trade either.
No, it was, I guess a comparison I could make it to is because I have been rewatching bits and pieces of Last Dance as background noise while working from home. When the Bulls flirted with the idea of trading Scottie Pippen, it's just kind of like that, where, like, they already have this established guy that they have a built camaraderie and rapport with, and Ron Harper, and then he traded for this young guy, and it's, like, similar to when Scotty and Michael bullied Tony Kukoc in the Olympics, where they're like, listen, this is the guy that the Bulls are saying is going to be the future of Chicago, let's put him in his place and let him know where he really stands. Like, Danny Ferry also has made it explicitly clear, like, from Terry's writing and fact gathering in this chapter, that, like, his body was almost completely shot by the time he came to the Cavs at 24 years old, which is scary, but, like, he had bad knees, bad back, like, was not the player he was at Duke, was not the player he was in Italy, and, like,
got hurt in Italy, and the Cavs basically never, like, Terry Pluto, according to him,
the Cavs never kept up with him.
Yeah, they didn't, like, do any vetting of his time in Italy, which is, like, a big concerning problem. Like, that's just insane.
Yeah, and I mean, I was wrong. He didn't come off the bench for the 95-96 season. He started all but three games, but played in all 82 for the Cavs, and he averaged 13.3 points, 3.8 rebounds, 2.3 assists, which isn't great on 39% shooting, mind you, and, like, like, it's just okay. Like, Danny Ferry was kind of washed, and it's not even like a Sabonis situation where Sabonis goes to Portland and he's, like, a great what-if. Like, Danny Ferry never really was a great what-if, and I think if the Cavs didn't listen to whispers and rumors of Ron Harper, like you said, then maybe they wouldn't win a title, but I think the Jordan Bulls would be a lot more defeatable if they didn't have Ron Harper to act as a defensive stalwart next to MJ.
100%. I also just think, like, even though this obviously isn't one specific, like, thing that changed everything, and again, the Bulls may have just been insurmountable. For this Cavs group, that is entirely possible. I do think, like, even if you were still going to play the three bigs and kind of, like, the style of 90s basketball was different, that one extra wing probably still was going to help you in a meaningful way.
No, it really wasn't, but at the same time, it's a shame because this Cavs team had so much potential. They were very good, and I think it's Terry who first says, like, this Cavs team could have... Well, no, he said the Miracle Richfield team could have won a championship, but I feel like this team, other than the first era LeBron Cavs, like, I look at with rose-tinted glasses, like, yeah, maybe they could have won a championship if things kind of fell their way, but there's a lot of limitations to that Cavs squad, but, like, the second LeBron era Cavs wouldn't have so much significance because, I mean, there would be significance of him winning a title just because of where he came from and how much it means to the city for a local kid to win it. But if, like, these 90s Cavs were able to just hold it together for just a little bit longer, I still think, like, maybe, just maybe, they would be able to sneak past the Chicago and at some point, because, like, Ron Harper really was a difference maker for the Bulls, and, like, they dogged him a lot there, as we learned that Michael Jordan isn't a very good teammate. But this Cavs squad was a lot of fun, and it's just kind of a shame it never worked out the way it should have.
Is where does the Ron Harper trade rank to you in all times? Probably Cavs mistakes to you. Is it? I think it's got to be top three.
Well, number one is, oh my God, this is such a tough question. Number one's probably the Kyrie trade for me. Then two is the Anthony Bennett pick. I mean, that's a pretty bad mistake. But that's a bad.
I'm putting the letter, in my top three.
Okay, so, you know what? I go with the Kyrie trade, the letter, and then the Anthony Bennett pick. And Ron Harper's top. The Ron Harper trade is maybe top five for me. But that Anthony Bennett pick was so bad.
Yeah. It just gets wiped away so fast that I wonder, you could argue they're still feeling the impact of it now, but it's sort of hard for me to actually do that.
I mean, historically, it doesn't give me confidence in the Cavs picking high in a bad draft class this year, but
not at all. Gotta say, we had our mock this week, and where we ended up, I was pretty happy with.
Me too, because that's Devin Vassell territory, baby, and two thumbs up for me. So, I think that's a good stopping point for us as we're jumping off the book.
Yeah, I'm very excited for us to continue diving into books. Again, we are not going to basketball at least until December, and that's extremely going to be starving for content at some point. So we'll do another book club. And Evan, should we announce it now? Should we say this?
Yes, announce the book.
I already promised
Chris.
So we're going to do we're going to step a tad bit outside the Cavs circle, but it's still going to be a basketball book, obviously. We're going to do Boys Among Men by Jonathan Abrams. For our next book, it's about the preps to pros generation. I've read it before. Have you?
No, I thought you were gonna. Let me be cheeky real quick. I thought we were just gonna listen to the discography of Boys to Men and just discuss about their impact on the R&B.
I mean, movement. We could. That'd be some bops, but
that'd be some bops too. But yeah, no, I've never read it before, so
it's a really, really good book. There's an all-time Kevin Garnett anecdote in this book that is just incredible. You probably best know Jonathan's work from Grantland. He did things like the Oral History of the Mouse at the Palace. I believe he's at Bleacher Report now, but he might have been my favorite Grantlander. He's all time, and this book's incredible, and I can't wait to dive into
it. Wait, not Zach Lowe?
I love feature writing.
Okay. I mean, I do, too.
I love feature writing. I wish I could do features. It is, like, the kind of work that I do a lot of the time, like, I don't know if we've talked about this, I wish I was doing narrative work, but I don't have the ability to get that the workaround that I would need to. Nor do I have the time to create that for myself because I have a full-time other job.
No,
maybe I'll stop complaining and actually work a little bit harder.
There you go. No, your next goal is to write a book, Chris. There you go.
That's a long time of my goals. But that's going to be it for today. Thanks for listening. Wear a mask. Be safe out there. Have a good weekend. And Evan, leave him out with your phrase here.
Wear a mask and go Cavs.